Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone.
It worked.
Hooray.
So, unbeknownst to the audience until just now, we were having some technical difficulties. Things seem all right, so I guess we'll jump in. Lots to talk about, some things more having to do with the Orange than others, but I guess we'll review kind of the NBA draft first. Starting with Syracuse players in particular, Dan, how do you feel about where both Chris McCullough and Rakeem Christmas landed? Do you feel like both are good fits, one maybe more than the other? What's your gut?
I think they're both interesting fits. I'll start with McCullough, just as he went first, and I'm a little more familiar with the whole situation, being a Brooklyn Nets fan. I was kind of two minds with the McCullough pick. It seemed like it was going to happen for weeks, and then later was reported that it was basically worked out where the Nets kind of knew they were going to get him, as long as someone didn't jump ahead of them. I don't know if they made like a straight-up promise, but it seemed like that was going to be their move if possible. So, obviously, he's a hometown kid. They've been making a lot of. He's the first native New York City player to join the Nets since they've moved to Brooklyn, which is pretty cool. Nets are in a really weird situation because there's no incentive for them to tank or lose at all because they control so little of their future in terms of draft picks. A lot of them are hung up with the Hawks and the Celtics from the disastrous. KG and Pearson, the slightly less disastrous Joe Johnson trades. So the Nets need to win, but when you're in the 29th pick, because for whatever reason you accepted a pick swap with the Atlanta Hawks, when you absolutely didn't need to do that because they were going to get rid of Joe Johnson however they needed to do it, and you wind up with the 29th pick as a pretty mediocre team, you don't have a lot of upside with that pick. So the McCullough pick probably doesn't help the Nets right off the bat. But it's high upside. And then with the trade for Rondae Hollis-Jefferson that the Nets made, it kind of gives them two first rounders for this year. And a way a lot of Net fans are looking at it is like McCullough ends up being the de facto 2016 first rounder. And if he's healthy and he works out, he'll probably be a crowd favorite. I'm sure he'll have a lot of family there and stuff, which will be cool. And he's a lottery type talent where the Nets, you know, aren't going to have that kind of potential to draft for a while. So, obviously, being a Syracuse player going to my favorite team is cool. Hopefully, it works out. And I don't know when we'll see him. There are rumors that he might not play at all next year. He said that he wants to be ready for sometime in November, December. So, it's interesting. It's not a totally obvious pick in terms of fit, but I think it's a good enough one, especially if he can work on that jumper and that we saw him use a couple times at Syracuse. It should be a good fit, especially because the Nets seem to be going. They didn't. Obviously they traded Mason Plumlee, so there's and Thad Young is going to be probably the de facto four. So it could be a. We might not know how this pick ended up until next year or the year after because of his injuries, but it should be fun. I'm kind of excited about it. And then I talked way too much about Chris. So for Rack, he's going to be on an NBA. I think he'll make the team. They're going to need big men because I don't imagine they're keeping around Kendrick Perkins and Brendan Haywood, and I don't know why they would anyway. And they've been just spending a ton of money between re-signing Kevin Love for $100 $10 million, and they've just re-signed DeMont Shumpert for $40 million, which seems like a ton for him. So they're going to need affordable players on that roster, and Christmas will be that, being a second rounder. As long as he rebounds well, defends his position, I think he has a really good opportunity to make that team and make a run into the playoffs. The Cavs were not deep last year. They need guys. Mozdov, obviously, is kind of limited in some ways, and Rath is probably a little more athletic and can do a little bit more in terms of matchup issues when they play more athletic centers. So it's always hard to say how a second rounder will fit in, especially with a team like the Cavs, who have so many stars. But because they have a short bench, and because there are a couple guys there that they're going to want to get off the books, I think he has a really good shot to make that team. And if you can be on an NBA champion, that's always pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree with both of those assessments, to be honest. I mean, Christmas in particular, I said this during the draft, I know, on Twitter and to you, I said, Christmas is just, he's grown so much as a player since we first saw him at SU. And I think, some of that came from really being around some veteran guys. I think, being on the Cavs now, I think he has a golden opportunity, to learn under guys like LeBron, like Kevin Love, like a Kyrie Irving. And then I think because of the moves the Cavs seem to be making, I mean, Tristan Thompson isn't a lockdown guy in the middle by any means, but he has, I think, improved on defense. I think LeBron is someone who can help improve a team's overall defense. We saw it with the Heat. I think we saw a little bit with the Cavs. And then the fact that they're bringing back Shumpert as well, brings a really solid perimeter defender, which should make Christmas's job easier. I don't think he's going to get a ton of minutes, at least this year, but I think it'll be a great experience if he's up with the NBA club the entire year, for him to be able to learn under these guys and really get a lot out of it. I think it is a perfect fit for him, just because, rather than him having a lot of pressure thrown on him in a situation, I think that him being part of a larger cast could really benefit him both short and long term. McCullough, same deal. I mean, you obviously follow the Nets a lot more than I do. And I think you're right. With him kind of being a lottery caliber pick, at least as far as upside goes, who could kind of help the Nets out going forward. Again, it's tough for us as SU fans and really any fans. We just didn't see enough of him to judge properly, but based on what everyone's saying, what he could be, it might be seen as a really nice pickup down the road. So more on that in a couple of years, I guess. But shifting to what's been all the rage this week, in particular today, and for people listening yesterday, free agency. This doesn't have to be SU specific. There's no one really moving that has SU ties, at least as yet. Those would be via trade, not via free agency. So what surprised you so far? I know your Nets are kind of on the sidelines for the most part, but I guess what's your take on day one?
Well, there is. I mean, the only SU guy I think is out there is Wes Johnson, who I know was visiting with the Nets. So there's a chance that we have two Syracuse guys in Brooklyn. But obviously, in the grand scheme of things, it's not a huge deal for the NBA. I'm just really interested. I don't think the looming salary cap increase has quite had the effect that we expected when you have guys like Jimmy Butler take $90 million for 5 years when he could have, taken a 2 or 3 year deal and bet on himself to become like a super huge max salary player. Obviously, it's affected how like LeBron has handled his contract, but he's not going anywhere. So I don't know. I think it's interesting to see some of the guys that have gotten locked up for as much money as they have right now. And it seems like fewer guys are kind of playing the game with the future cap increases, and more guys are just kind of locking themselves up for the long term. Same with Kevin Love. He signed 5 years, which is it. I don't think anyone expected. If he were signed with the Cavs, I think everyone was betting it was a one or a one plus one. So it's almost like a more standard free agency. But maybe that means that in a couple of years, when those cap increases do come, and guys like Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and LeBron are, you know, could be on the market, maybe that's when things get crazy. But also, just a lot of weird guys getting big contracts. Kyle Singler got 5 for $25, which is nuts. Obviously, we talked about Shumpert, who I think is a nice player, but $10 million, I don't know if it's a $10 million a year player. You have the Knicks going after Jeremy Lin and Lance Fields, which I'm sure you're a big fan of, trying to get the band back together. It's been a really interesting day. I don't think anything's been like – there hasn't been anything that like really dominated the news, but it seems like just the constant barrage of re-signings and some moves, it's made for a fun day of sports, I think.
Agreed. I know it wasn't always this way, but I feel like for the most part, like whenever there was a new CBA, we'd see this. But in 99, we started out the lockout in 2011, 12. It just seems like now every single year, because these are more, you know, less long-term deals, more kind of player-focused deals, there's just so many good young players in the league that it's become this kind of bonanza for the first, like, 24 to 48 hours. Helps that LeBron's been on the market twice, Melo's been on the market, Wade's been on the market several times. There's a lot of players who has either moved or chosen not to move over time, and that's, I think, what's made it so much fun, especially for those of us, you know, who grew up in the 90s and saw, you know, minimal player movement, especially amongst, like, kind of the big, big names. Everyone, despite the fact there was free agency, a lot of them really stuck around for their teams, at least, you know, for a 10 to 12 year stretch before maybe finishing their careers somewhere else. You know, for me, as a Knicks fan, things are always miserable. Today is not looking any better because my team's chasing after players who were last on the roster, you know, 3-4 years ago. Guys who just aren't, I'm not looking for big names necessarily, I'm looking for fit. And I just think that the Knicks have been tied to everyone under the sun. Doesn't seem like they're really being taken seriously in most sweepstakes. DeAndre Jordan and LaMarcus Aldridge, most troublingly. It seems like we really didn't get in touch with Danny Green enough for him to even give us consideration, which hurts because he's a Long Island kid who really would have been, you know, a nice local addition. The Knicks, it just seems like there's a lot for us. Not going well, and I mean, it's still early, but you know, the cap raise that you alluded to, we're kind of looking at, you know, it could be a $23 million jump at the absolute max next year, which could have the Knicks and a lot of other teams kind of waiting it out for guys like Durant and others to hit the open market when we kind of know where all the big names are going this year, you know. Say Gasol goes to the Grizzlies, Love and LeBron are headed back to Cleveland. It just, there's a couple guys here and there, but maybe it's smart to wait. Maybe it's smart to sign some one-year deals, try to compete, try not to give away a top 10 pick because you traded it away. I don't know. But yeah, it's been a fun free agency period so far, and it's definitely interesting to see the tide kind of turning against the Lakers, maybe against the Clippers too, if DeAndre Jordan leaves. But Dan, like, what team do you think day one has really improved themselves the most, or at least positioned themselves the best? Of course, this is dependent on signings going through or signings that might be rumored. Like who do you think has done the most of themselves in the first 24 hours free agency or so?
I love the Bulls locking up Butler for a pretty manageable contract. I think that he's just a really stellar player, and they got him for, what, $18 million a year for 5 years, which I think, assuming he continues to progress, since he's very young, could end up being a really good contract, especially when that cap increases and that ends up being, you know, not a crazy number for an all-star-level NBA player. The team that seems to be really intriguing, and I don't really agree with the big move they made today, but it could end up paying dividends down the road, is the Phoenix Suns. They locked up Brandon Knight, who I think is pretty good. They gave him $70 million, I think, for 5 years, if I'm remembering correctly. I don't love doing Tyson Chandler 4 for 52, but word is that they then brought in Chandler to meet in their meeting with LaMarcus Aldridge, who I wouldn't have said the Suns were an option, but he kind of he and Chandler kind of would fit together well in the front court. Chandler obviously is a pure rim defender and would leave Aldridge to space the floor, and he can kind of do a lot of the same things he does in Portland. And they seem pretty dedicated to building a fun, competitive team, especially for a market that isn't usually one that's all that easy to grow a team like that in the NBA. I don't think that Aldridge will end up there, but if they somehow pull out that coup, they'd be a very good team going forward, I think, with all the young guards they have and all the, it'd be like one of those classic Suns teams that scores a ton of points. And then they have a guy like Chandler in the middle who should, really help a defense that's struggled in the past. So I think they're the most intriguing one after day one. I think the best move was the Bulls getting Butler to agree to that 5-year deal, though.
Yeah, the Suns were floated last year. I know they tried to position themselves as a contender to get LeBron. That didn't happen. But, everyone said, this is a team with assets. This is a team with a lot of young wings, a lot of great perimeter players. They do have – I saw them play last year, and while it wasn't, the prettiest thing in the world, it was something that looked like they could build upon. So Chandler, like you said, salary seems out of whack, 4 years, $52 million. Obviously, the cap raise for the next two off seasons is going to make that hurt a little bit less, but you also have to figure that Chandler may not be in the league anymore by the last year of it, depending on how injury problems shake out, et cetera. But yeah, I think Phoenix has oddly positioned themselves very well. Seems like a lot of small market teams are, to be honest, today. The Bucks signing Chris Middleton, I think in general, the Bucks under Jason Kidd are just going to continue to improve. And I just really like what they're putting together there. Kind of envious of what they're putting together there. Seems like that Lake Report said that they were in contention for Greg Monroe. Suddenly, obviously, still more time to meet with the Knicks, et cetera. But you're seeing teams like Phoenix, teams like Milwaukee position themselves well. I think the Cavs, obviously, locking up Love pretty quickly is a huge move. Wasting 4 years and $40 million on Shumpert seems like a Knicks-type move. But, what do I know? I'd say that's probably the worst move for me is that Shumpert deal. I would have said Chandler until I saw what you alluded to, that Chandler had come into the Aldridge meetings and really put the Suns on the map. The other worst move of the day, and we'll see if this is actually true or not, is Kobe Bryant's kind of presentation at the Lakers meeting with LaMarcus Aldridge, which seemed like it went down in flames, but kind of disputed whether or not the report or the initial reports coming out of that had any veracity. But Dan, who is your worst of the day? You think it's one of those two? Is there another move that just defies logic to you?
Yeah, the Kobe thing's a good call. I kind of forgot about that, especially with his pedantic tweets afterwards. But it seems like most of the reporters that are tapped in seem to believe that it went at least somewhat according to the way that the initial reports came out, where Kobe kind of said, "Oh, hey, you could come be my number two. I'm sure all-star level LaMarcus Aldridge wants to be number two to a 39-year-old Kobe Bryant who wants to take 30 shots a game." So that was a good call. Definitely not the brightest thing that anyone's done, if that's true.
Fair. So I guess looking at, some of the top names, maybe just go around. Let's see. Let me get a top free agents list quick. We can play a little prediction game before we head into halftime. Now, for the large contingent, oddly, of Syracuse fans who hate the NBA, this is probably excruciating, but really, there's nothing to hate. It's a great game. It's a lot more fun than college basketball has been of late. We'll see if that changes with the 30-second shot clock. But anyway, looking at some of the top guys, this is all just unsigned guys. So, you know, some of these are obvious, others are not. Where does LeBron James go?
100%.
Same here. Marc Gasol.
Memphis. Sounds like he's pretty much just meeting with Memphis.
LaMarcus Aldridge.
San Antonio.
I want to say San Antonio, and I think it ultimately ends up them, but the Suns wrinkle is crazy, and I don't count them out in Portland yet.
Yeah, it seems weird because, like, all we've heard with him is, like, he wants it out of Portland, but it seems like they don't consider themselves out of it. But the way that apparently the Lakers went, where he was, like, kind of upset it wasn't about basketball or as much about basketball as he wanted it to be, well, it's not going to get any more about basketball than it will in San Antonio, where that's going to be 100% of the focus. And, you know, obviously he's a Texas guy, so it just seems to make sense. He can also kind of be the heir apparent at the four to Tim Duncan, who I don't think can continue to play forever, although I might be wrong on that. But yeah, that just seems like the logical fit. And I kind of appreciate, I know you're not a big Spurs fan. I kind of appreciate the Spurs just because they're so good at doing things the right, I mean, not like in a stupid, like, St. Louis Cardinals thing, but like they just run their team so well. And they really haven't locked down like a free agent like this in, I can't even tell you how long. So it'd almost be cool to just see them go out and identify a guy they want free agency, the Mavs contract guy in depth, because I kind of appreciate how they do business. I know that you have some anti-Spurs sentiment leading back to the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm still bitter about 1999 because I'm a Knicks fan. But beyond that, I do appreciate the way they do business. And I'm kind of watching in awe and horror. They kind of reload on the fly. You know, I always love to celebrate their failures, but their successes are stunning in the modern era of the NBA with free agency, et cetera. It's insane to me what they, if they pull off Aldridge, I mean, that team's going to win 65 games next year. I'm just, again, pretty much in awe. And we'll see. I wouldn't mind him being on the Suns, but I agree with you. I think Spurs. Draymond Green, who thought that this was going to be a pretty cut and dry situation with Golden State, and now suddenly, based on some reports that went out, I know Adrian Wojnarowski also had some notes on this. It seems like they're not as close as people thought they were in terms of dollar amount, et cetera.
Yeah, apparently everyone thought, like, first there were obviously there've been Detroit talks for a long time. He's from there. He has a lot of Michigan pride. And then after the finals, it sounded like he just loved the area and loved the team so much that he might even give them, you know, a discount under the mats. But apparently, I guess probably seeing guys like Chris Middleton get $70 million and some of the other deals for similar-ish players that have come out today, he probably wants to see what the market's out there for. So I think he ends up back with Golden State, but I think it ends up being more expensive than Golden State probably wants it.
I'm going to go with Golden State, too, but I will take a slightly different tack. I think it ends up being a one-year deal. I think it takes a one-year deal at a discount to keep them a little more manageable cap figure, and then I think he re-hits the open market next year, and he might end up re-signing with Golden State at a higher dollar amount because of the higher cap. But, yeah, I see him signing a one-year deal with Golden State. DeAndre?
Yeah, he's an interesting one. This one I honestly don't know. I saw some stuff about the Mavericks today, and it seems they probably want to make a splash, and he would be a very natural replacement and upgrade over Tyson Chandler, who they just lost. So in an effort mostly to not just keep on saying the team players are turning to their existing team, I'll say he goes to Dallas.
I'm going to agree there. DeAndre and Dallas have kind of been linked for a little while. Dallas sees what Houston and San Antonio are able to do. I know Dallas has struck out probably, what, 5 straight years now on really any big free agent target. I mean, you just can't expect Dirk to just keep going forever. I know he's obviously started to not fade into the background, but he's definitely transitioning into more of a, like, Tim Duncan type role with the team. And I think they do really need somebody else to take over the lion's share of the defenses. Jordan might not be that type of player. I think he needs to be set up well with a good point guard, a la Chris Paul, which might cause some problems for the Mavs. But I think a max deal with the Mavericks makes the most sense for all parties involved, which, as I mentioned earlier a little bit, really does screw over the Clippers quite a bit, who I think going into the offseason thought that they had a beeline on them. But Tim Duncan.
Yeah. Oh, San Antonio. He's not leaving.
Yeah, same. Who else do we got? Oh, of interest to my team, Greg Monroe.
That was one of the things that I thought would be like an early one just because he's been so heavily linked to the Knicks. And I'm going to stick with the Knicks, but I wouldn't be shocked if they got in a real fight with Portland just because he's a similar-ish player to Aldridge, and it seems like they're going to lose Aldridge. So I think the Knicks will end up with him. I don't know how that'll work other than the Knicks just need talent so bad that it'll be an upgrade. But I don't know. It seems like it's less of a sure thing than it was a few days ago when the Knicks seemed to be like the only real contender there.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I do think he ends up with the Knicks. I know SB Nation thinks it'll probably be like a 2-year deal. I'd probably agree there. Just because he'll want to get back out in the open market, but he'll still make some big money. I know I mentioned Milwaukee and Portland before. You mentioned Portland just now. I think both present some intriguing opportunities. Obviously, if you bring him into Milwaukee suddenly becomes, I'd say, an odds-on top-four team in the East. But the problem is, do you really want to just gather assets to line up behind Cleveland? And then in the West, while it's harder to get through the West, I think right now things have never been more wide open. And that's not to troll Golden State. It's just to say Golden State didn't skate by any means through that playoff, especially when you look at, teams are only going to get better. They did face some teams racked with injuries. That doesn't mean they didn't deserve the title, but it's just to say that, the roles will only get harder going forward as teams start to figure out how to defend them, how to emulate their style, et cetera. I think Monroe ends up picking between probably Milwaukee and the Knicks. He chooses the Knicks because of the big market. I'm not a big fan. I mean, I don't mind Monroe's game, and I want him because we need a bigger name to come into New York to help. But as far as finding an interior defender, a guy who's going to help with spacing, a guy who's going to help with tempo, I don't necessarily see him as that guy. But alas, I do not.
Yeah. If I was a Knicks fan, like, I'd be so over this triangle offense just because
I am over.
Like, it's just so limiting to the players that can be effective. And I don't know why you wouldn't want to put Melo at a stretch four position where he was so good for a couple of years. Instead, it seems like all the guys they've been connected with are straight up fours, and it forces Melo to play the three where he's still good, but he's not as good. I just feel like if you're going to go for it, and obviously the Knicks kind of need to with Melo on the roster, why not maximize his potential and fill players around him, which also would make the Knicks more of a modern type team.
Yeah, I agree with that. And to be honest, like, if we're looking for a stretch four type, I'm a much bigger fan of a guy like Jai Crowder, who, a lot of folks should remember from some frustrating days when he was in college. But yeah, I'd much prefer a player like that. He'd be a lot cheaper, but a lot. I don't know anything about basketball, apparently, because I root for the Knicks. two more players, however, we'll just quick evaluations for, and then we can jump into some halftime. Paul Millsap, who I think is one of the more intriguing people on the market here.
I think Millsap got locked down by the Hawks. I think they signed him to a $558 million.
Was he official?
Over 3 years. I believe so. I know Orlando went hard after him.
Yes, no, you were correct. I was looking at one of the SB Nation's lists, and that list did not include that. And then lastly, obviously things are going fast and furious. If I'm Millsap and I'm offered a large amount of money, I think you can take it. Because I mean, the longer he stood out there, the more likely the Knicks were going to throw a max deal at him or something stupid like that. So I'm glad that didn't happen. I guess last but not least, another intriguing one, somebody who is probably going to start coming up on a lot of other teams' radars, Robin Lopez.
He's interesting because he can fit in a lot of places. I think he's a pretty good player. But he's obviously not on the same level as like a lot of the other bigs, but he's very useful. I don't know. I haven't seen too much about him today. I don't think he's going to stay with Portland.
No,
and I know the Knicks are meeting with him. You know what? Maybe he ends up because LA, the Lakers need a center to go along with, they want Julius Randle to play the power forward. Maybe they go after him and pay him a little too much money after like they strike out on everyone else.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty decent bet. For me, Lopez comes down to three teams. It's the Lakers, the Knicks, and the Bucks. I think whoever loses out on Greg Monroe goes after Lopez as the Knicks and Bucks. I think Portland's in the past for him at this point. I think the Lakers end up overpaying him. I think the Knicks actually show restraint for once. And if they aren't able to get him or Monroe, I think they do kind of look towards a Crowder or somebody like that. But he's an interesting one. He's one that I think could be one of the bigger surprises of this kind of top 20 or the 25 free agents there.
What about Dwayne Wade?
Dwayne Wade. Why did I lead out Dwayne Wade? I guess I just assumed he'll re-sign with the Heat.
He might leave.
He might leave, but like, do we buy his general, like, you know, he's still a max player, or that he deserves a max deal? I mean, this is like the Kobe Bryant situation all over again. I just don't know if he's, I mean, Miami seems to be willing to pay him more than fair market value, but he's just not, I don't think he's worth much more than fair market value. And the only reason he is worth a little bit more is because it's Miami, is because that's going to, keep them engaged in the post LeBron era for them.
Yeah, I think he's definitely worth more to them than he is anyone else. And it is one of those situations where you want to keep the fans happy and he's beloved by Miami fans. But on the court, like, he just can't play for more than 45, 50 games. I don't know. I mean, you can't give him max. If he wants the max, like, you have to let him walk. And I don't think he's going to get it from anywhere else either. So I think ultimately it's hard to choose one of these kind of guys to leave the team they've been with forever at this point, especially when they're so clearly past their prime. But it does seem like he is posturing for something.
Agreed. I just don't know who – I don't know who else has the money to sign him to that sort of deal. I mean, the Lakers, I guess. But, like, why would you want a player redundant of Nick Young and Kobe Bryant? Like, why would you want another one of those, especially when Bryant has injury problems, Wade has injury problems. It just seems silly. But the Lakers would qualify as a quote-unquote silly franchise, and dumber things have happened, I'm sure.
I think I'm actually rooting for that now, because it would be hilarious.
Well, I get to watch it play out, like, live here, as Laker fans lose their goddamn mind.
They'd be really excited about it for, like, a minute.
Kobe, like, yes. Yeah, like 2 seconds. And then they'd realize that, oh, we just got another Kobe Bryant. Just in time for the other one later.
Yeah, this is, like, the worst possible thing.
Yeah. All right. So on that note, beer time. We're in halftime now. What were you drinking last week or so, Dan?
I was pretty much sticking with the standards this week. Nothing too crazy that I haven't tried before. Some Goose Island, some Abita, some Brooklyn, some Dale. So kind of like the standards that I find around the neighborhood pretty easily. Hopefully for the fourth, I can go get a little more adventurous. I like to, you know, I'm with my family, so I can bait them into buying me something that I haven't had before. So next week I'll have something more exciting to report on, I hope.
Fair enough. And on my end, start off with the Cigar City Jai-Alai IPA. Nice bit of trade for me from Florida's best brewery, hands down. And after that, I was at a Stone Sour Fest down in Escondido, and had a great time. It was really hot out, which was made drinking for 4 hours difficult. But yeah, I got to try 15 different really great sours. The best of the day for me was Canteon's Irish. Canteon's one of the most, if not the most famed brewery in Belgium. And Iris, just a really, really fantastic brew from them. Not easy to locate, but highly recommended. Had the Rare Barrels Map of the Sun, which was also delicious. Had a really, one that you would probably like a lot, Dan. The Libertine Pub down in that area brought Sour Pumpkin Cranberry Porter, which was one of the more intriguing beers I've ever tasted.
Whoa.
Yeah, definitely, that's
a lot of things.
Yeah, it was all over the map, but like in a very good way. It kind of changed as it warmed. It had a really tart kind of cranberry to start, but as it warmed up, you started tasting a little more of that, those porter malts and that pumpkin flavor. It was again really, really interesting beer. What else? Had a Toolbox Brewing's grass-fed lettuce, the dry hop sour blonde. Really, really good. Again, these are all good, so I didn't thought I'd leave that part out. At Almanac's Valley of the Heart's Delight. Had Cascade, Vlad the Impaler. Cascade of Portland, Vlad the Impaler was a pretty hefty sour on their part. So I had Cascade Sang Royal, as well as their cranberry. Cascade has a ton of sours, so they had kind of their own big setup there. And yeah, that was most of it. Like I said, a lot of great sours. I'll have plenty to talk about next week too, non-sour related, since 4th of July, hanging out with friends, got plenty of beer here. So yeah, should be a good time.
Yeah, it's a good holiday, I feel like.
Yeah, this is perfect for drinking. I feel like, especially knowing that I'm probably, knock on wood, we're waiting for finalization, relocating to a different part of LA. Probably my last time kind of really enjoying everything Santa Monica has to offer on the beach and beer and summer front. So it'll be a nice send-off, hopefully. Yeah, moving on. we'll stop talking about the NBA. Sorry. For those of you who have been snarling for an extended period of time. And now we're going to move on to basketball recruiting, or, well, we can talk about Ty's battle if we want, but more importantly, I think SU's recent move in the transfer market was a very, very exciting one. And Dan, what do you think about our new 7'2" addition to the Syracuse Orange basketball team?
Mostly I'm intrigued more than anything else. At first blush, just because he didn't really much at Providence last year, he played like 10 minutes a game and got like, you know, he was averaging like points and a couple rebounds, and you know, he did block some shots as you expect for a new guy. I wasn't quite sure why the staff seemed to be going so hard after him, but then I realized that when Jim Boeheim goes after a transfer, it almost always works out really well. They don't just go after anyone. So obviously they see something in Chukwu who they think can make him a real force in the zone. And we've never had a 7'2" guy. There's the article, you know, high school coach is going to be pretty big, but he thinks he can be, you know, more than just a defensive stopper. Like, he has a little more off the game than show up Providence, and he's a legit runner, which is exciting because obviously, we all want to get back to that kind of brand of basketball where we have Syracuse running up and down the court. So, yeah, I'm excited. I don't know much of him. It's hard to really glean a lot from his Providence stint because he was not really a huge factor in learning the game. But I think it's actually great that he'll get to sit out for a year, as much as it would be nice to have him next season when we have some depth issues inside. I think he'll be really – if he's going to be a good player, he'll be – better player for sitting out for a year and learning the zone and not getting sent right into the fire. So I trust the staff as much as I do trust the staff recruiting high school players. I trust them a lot more with transfers because they have taken them very often and they've worked out like at a very high clip. So I'm very intrigued to see what Chu brings in a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point. SU hasn't really dipped a ton in the transfer market until recently. Some notable recent additions on top of Pascal Chukwu is obviously Wes Johnson, and one of my favorite seasons of SU basketball, and probably a lot of other people's as well. And then the current Michael Benajay, who's going to be the star of the team, by all accounts, for the 2015-16 season. So adding, you know, another high-profile name. I mean, Chukwu coming out of high school was 61st overall in the ESPN 100. He was kind of rated as the seventh best player at his position. I mean, and you're not going to see, like, a ton of dominant centers like that. And he was already 7'1 coming out of high school, and he's grown in since. I guess it's more dependent on, you know, like, which you read, like, which sites you read or whatever. But nonetheless, the fact that he could help on the offensive end, at least in terms of running, would be fantastic, because I think, you know, we're kind of in year 3 or 4 of a pretty brutal offensive stretch for the Orange, and that's been covered ad nauseum. A couple of years ago, everyone said we didn't score, but we played efficiently. This time around, at least the last 2 years, in my book, we're not playing efficiently necessarily anymore. We're just playing poorly on offense. And that's contributed to kind of low scoring output. So hopefully, in Chukwu and a couple of the other guys that are coming in, we can see a team that, while obviously defense is huge, I'd love to see a little more off the basketball. Also curious here, because I know, like you were saying, that you always trust the staff with high school talent, but you more so trust them with transfer talent. It's interesting that Syracuse did not make Chukwu's top five coming out of high school. The top five, Providence, D.C., Connecticut, Notre Dame, Texas. Three obvious ones for a Connecticut kid. Another maybe fourth obvious one in Notre Dame, and then Texas kind of a wild card. So curious to see somebody come down to those five, you know, a couple years ago and then end up with the Orange now. But excited to have them, obviously.
Yeah, and pretty much the whole list was different. Like, I didn't really look at those schools very much in the transfer. It was us and Kansas, and I think Iowa State maybe. So it was a much different list I feel like tends to happen. Like, it, you think that when a kid transfers, he'd go back to what he looked at in high school, but it seems more often, especially because I guess a lot of these kids end up upgrading, that they looked at like a lot of different schools. So also interesting that a lot of like big time schools got involved, even though his freshman year wasn't much to write home about. So obviously, if Boeheim wanted him and Bill Self wanted him, I feel pretty good about it.
I would agree. I know it's not exactly the same as football, where, you know, even if a guy is rated 3 stars, if you see a lot of the big schools offering him, it's usually a very good sign. I think in this case, yeah, the fact that Kansas is chasing him just as much as we were does say very good things about our the player that we're getting, we're going to have on the court for the 16-17 season. But moving on to actual recruiting for high school players, Tyus Battle. What's the latest? What do you think our chances are of getting the one-time Michigan commit, one-time Syracuse favorite, to kind of come into the fold for the Orange for the class of 2016?
I feel pretty good about it. I have a hard time believing that it's a coincidence that he opened up his recruitment around a visit to Syracuse after committing to Michigan kind of unexpectedly. I don't know anything more than anyone else does. It's just all kind of projecting on my part. But it would make a lot of sense to me that in basketball recruiting, you don't see a lot of decommitments, especially for players like of Battle's caliber. So it would be very understandable if he didn't want to make it seem like Syracuse was trying to poach him from Michigan and he waits a little bit to make a commitment or something. But the fact that his recruitment and Syracuse, he visited Syracuse right after, and then he hasn't really done anything since, and there haven't been really talks of him going anywhere else. It just seems like it's all lining up for Syracuse to land him at the end of the day. Obviously, no one expected him to commit to Michigan, so it's a very fluid situation, and who actually knows what goes on. But just looking at what's gone down in the last couple of weeks, Syracuse makes the most sense, just based on how these recruitments generally go, especially because Syracuse has been on him since he was a freshman in high school, and a lot of people thought Syracuse would be the favorite for a while, and then obviously the waters got muddied. But unless he schedules a visit to Duke or something's coming up, I feel very good about this one. I just don't know what the timeline is, and I don't know if we should expect him to commit anytime soon. But I would say Syracuse should be it feels like they're the leader here, which is all you can really ask for at this point.
Fair enough. I'm going to have to agree. I feel good, but I'm going to wait before I get too excited, knowing that a lot can still happen. Obviously, with basketball, it's a little different than football. Once you lock up a kid, it usually works out. But considering the kid that we're talking about was supposedly locked up somewhere, and that is not the case anymore, got to be interesting to kind of see what happens next. And obviously, it would be a huge, huge get for SU in 16-17, suddenly looking at an immensely talented team top to bottom. But lastly, I guess we'll got about 10 minutes or so left. Syracuse football recruiting, a place where Dan and I get reluctantly dragged into every single year. I feel like more so this year than possibly any other, with Robert Washington kind of starting the hype train and everything kind of picking up from there. I mean, I wouldn't say that we're setting the world on fire in terms of recruiting trail, but you got to like the general momentum that this class has been able to seem to build. I know some of these guys just haven't been properly evaluated yet, so it's going to be interesting to see where all of them fall. Star ratings don't always matter, especially once you get to like Northeast kids in the 2-ish star range. Like you can't really evaluate every kid as thoroughly as you'd like. But Dan, in the last couple of weeks, what's kind of the biggest storyline for you, or the biggest commitment that you've seen for SU?
I like that we kind of made a splash to start 2017 with Daewoo Davis. I am really enamored with his combination of size and speed. It seems like with the wide receivers, we haven't quite gotten a guy that has the same measurables and the same reported 40 times as him. And he really looks the part of like a really standout Florida receiver. Obviously, there was a whole thing with him trying to commit to Miami a couple weeks ago and didn't work out. They're filling up really quick, even in 2017. So who knows if it's a numbers game or for what? I don't really know, or I don't really care either why they didn't take him. But he seems like a really legit player, a really nice first 2017 guy. A lot of times you'll see the first 2017 guy or the first 2 years out player for a school like Syracuse be a little bit of a lesser known recruit that they offer at a camp or something. But this kid has a ton of offers. He's from a really good football area. He's apparently transferring to a really good football school for us, American Heritage, where we've had four or five guys in the last couple of years. Most recently, I think Tyler Provo and Juwan Dowles are both from that school. So that's a good sign for Syracuse. It's an SU-friendly school. So that was good. I was excited to get going on that class because the recruiting cycles have gotten really fast, especially if you look at a school like Miami, where they already have probably, I can look it up really quick while I'm talking here. Miami, they're pretty much done with their 2016 class and are almost halfway full with their 2017 class already. And they're a bit of an anomaly because I think Golden's trying to do everything he can off the field to keep his job, but they're still pulling in some impressive players really early. And then there's other schools like Florida State that already has probably 8 or 9 2017 recruits. So things are moving faster than they ever have in football recruiting, for better or worse. And now I have the numbers up now. Miami has 21 kids in 2016 or 2015. 2016. This is the coming year. And then they already have 8 kids in 2017. So Syracuse needs to kind of be on board because the train's not going to slow down for SU. So good to death. Good start there. That'd probably be my biggest thing. But I also really like the linebacker out of New Jersey we just picked up. His name is escaping me for 1 second here. Dymel Parker. I know some people have been worried about reports that Syracuse has passed and a couple other linebackers, a couple other Jersey players in the last couple weeks. So obviously the staff is, if they have the talent that they want identified, they're not just taking the first commitment to come in, which is something we've heard might have been a strategy of George McDonald, where we ended up, then we ended up backing off the players, which isn't a good look. So it seems that the staff is being a little more patient. They're identifying talent. They're waiting a little longer on the top tier guys before they jump at another kid and get a little, get too twitchy with this recruitment. And hopefully it works out. If they like Park more than the other guys tried to commit in weeks past, then they, it all works out. So it seems like the staff is doing a good job of getting like a talent that's at least like a step up from in the last couple seasons. And hopefully and we talk about it every week. We can't just hold on to Schaefer if it turns out he's just not the coach. But he seems to be doing everything right on this side of things so far this year. And this class is really shaping up to probably be the best one that we've had in 7 or 8 years.
That's spot on. And you know what? I think Davis is a good call. I think that having a guy that big wrapped up now, it's a long recruiting season, so there's always things that can happen. We've seen it before, but having him lock up this early is huge for us because it signals to others that, SU could be a force going forward. And I think if SU has a great season on the field, you could see them close strong on 2016, gain some momentum for 2017. I mean, in college football, everything kind of rolls downhill once you get momentum going one way or the other. So it's going to be something to keep an eye on. To me, one of the bigger moves was solidifying Sam Heckel. I know originally he wanted to commit to Northwestern. Northwestern was just didn't have a spot open for him. And Heckel, not that by himself he isn't great, I think he is. What he does, though, is he really solidifies our offensive line position for the next cycle already. And I know we've talked about this, and so has Schaefer. We've kind of focused in on one couple position groups, and the next time we have to focus in on the other ones and vice versa. It's nice to see that after we pulled in four or five offensive linemen in the previous cycle for 2015, and now we're going after, we, I think we have three offensive linemen for 2016, Tekel, Bill Brouse, and who was the other one?
Cam DeGeorge.
What? Oh, there it is. And Cam DeGeorge. All guys who, you know, rate out to be probably, you know, high two, three-star guys, have offers from the power schools. And, yeah, this isn't to put pressure on the incoming crop of freshmen for 2015, but it is to at least provide some backup. But you know what? There are a lot of veteran guys leaving the roster between this year and next. So I do like that move to really solidify the trenches, at least on the offensive end. I also like the Darius Stubbs move. I know we had a little fun with the Ivy League comment the other day, but in general, you know, Stubbs, and you and I again talked about this over on our kind of staff page. It does signal to guys like Mo Neal and to a lesser extent Trey Bryant that, hey, like, you know, we can wait, but we can't wait forever. Like, if we're going to have an H-back style guy on this roster, you know, we kind of got to get your buy-in sooner rather than later. We're not just going to hang around and wait for you guys to buy in at the last second. So I think, you know, Stubbs seems like a really, really quick back based on everything we've seen. I mean, obviously he's going to play more of an H-back role. And utilize that speed on the outside. But I think this does set in motion Neal and Bryant sooner rather than later. I think both can come in if we want. It seems like SU, I mean, whether they're wordsmithing or not, seem to feel that Trey Bryant can be billed as a kind of Irvin Phillips type hybrid back. While Mo Neal is going to be our traditional H-back, whatever that means in the Syracuse offense. But yeah, I think both could end up there. I do hope so. I think both are really, really talented kids, you know, 3-4-star guys. But Dan, do you think that the Stubbs commitment does have a little bit of that to it? And do you think that Neal and Brian can both end up on campus?
Yeah, I think, like you said, wordsmithing, I think that's a good way to put it. Obviously, there's the promise to Robert Washington that he'll be the only, quote, running back, unquote, coming to the team. Stubbs, I think, you know, he's small. He's smaller. He's 5'11", like 180. So he's definitely filled more of that H-back, staff-back role, as does Mo Neal. I think Bryant's a little bit more of a classic running back, but however it works, obviously you want to keep your promises. Anyone who played the NCAA football games going back a couple of years knows that you can't just break your promises to recruits and expect it to work out well for you every time. But, you know, say we plan on moving to corner, or we, you know, have these guys filling in at that other role. I think it's, as long as you stay open with Robert, who is obviously a very important recruit, you want it at the most really talented players on the roster as you can. So I wouldn't mind bringing in both. I think Mo Neal's probably a little more important just because he does have some of those other relationships. He's a friend of Robert's, which I think, you know, maybe if Bryant commits first, maybe Washington doesn't care so much if Mo Neal comes as well because they have a connection. But I think you want not a position where we can just pass on players for arbitrary reasons. At the same time, you don't want to become a staff that lies to recruits. So it's a bit of a fine line you have to walk, but hopefully they find a way to at least grab one of those guys. And the way things are going, I don't know. Mo Neal seems to be playing out, you know, letting the process play out, which obviously he is well on his right to do. But it is encouraging that he set his visit date for, I believe it's 2 weeks from now. I think he'll be up on like the 16th or 17th, sometime in that area. So wouldn't totally shock me if we got a commitment out of him when he comes up, but even if not, I think we're in pretty good position for both those guys. Especially, I think Brian, a lot of people were surprised he didn't have Missouri on his final list, which seemed to be one of the leaders in his commitment recruitment. So that's a very interesting one now. I think Neal's probably the preference there if we have to choose.
Agreed. And I guess to close out our conversation tonight, do you think if Mo Neal commits that we've done enough to pique Christian Colon's interest and maybe put some more consideration into the Orange.
It's hard to tell just because Colon, he just committed. So you don't often see kids turn around and set visits or start expressing interest in other places like 2 weeks after. Okay, it's a couple, like a month or two. But it wouldn't shock me. Apparently he and Washington and Neil are all really close. So, maybe we get a courtesy visit and they can change their mind. But I think there's definitely a chance that it would help in that regard. So pulling a kid away from Penn State is never going to be easy. We've won some battles there in the years past. But once a kid's committed there, I don't love our odds, but I would definitely say, considering the circumstances, they're probably better than they normally would be. So, hopefully the coaches stay in his ear. I'm sure they will. And if Neil commits, he'll have two good friends on campus. So it's definitely an entire thing.
Agreed. You can't guarantee kids always want to go to the same place with one another. I would say of the friends that we have on the roster, obviously Scoop Bradshaw and Rick Culpepper, I think there's a much different bond type of thing that, they really wanted to pursue going to the next level with one another. Washington's talked about it with Moneal. He's talked about it with Christian Colon. All three of them have seemed to mention it. Colon himself even said if Robert and Mo were there, he'd definitely have to give SU a pretty hard look. But, I can't say for sure, and I know nobody really can. At the end of the day, these are kids. They're going to make the decisions they're going to make. I really hope that Colon could consider us just because of our current D-line issues. But, long way away from all this concluding itself in early February of next year, which, again, quite a ways away.
For sure. And it would be a nice get. But, this, you can only guys really shot. We'll see what happens. This Neil visit should be a pretty interesting event. If he locks him down, then maybe things do change in that respect. But either way, I think everyone should be pretty happy with how things are going. As I said before, it seems like, we're not vaulting into like the top 25 recruiting classes or anything yet, but it seems we're getting like a slightly higher grade of player than we have even in the last two or three years, which, considering all the bloviating about George McDonald's recruiting prowess, kind of interesting that guys like Bobby Acosta are able to come up with three and seem to be doing at least well. Not to pile on George McDonald because we spent about a full year doing that, but doesn't seem like we lost any heat off our fastball on the recruiting trail by losing him to NC State. It doesn't really sound like NC State is doing what they always do. It doesn't seem like things really change there either.
Yeah, I'd agree there. Obviously, still some time, but I don't necessarily see McDonald making all that much hay. But very long off season, very long recruiting season. Maybe he does come on a bit. If he doesn't and ends up just, coaching wide receivers, whatever it is, I guess we wish him the best. I can't really tell with George. I probably would have said yes until, the outburst on the way out, or at least during the demotion. And then now I'm not sure.
Yeah, obviously, I can understand, not really rehash this, but I can kind of understand why he'd be mad, but that whole thing was not handled well. And I'm looking at the 24/7 page, which is it's hard to keep up to date with, the coaching stuff because only so many kids report who their main recruiters are, but not a lot logged in here for the NC State part of things, although this could be way off, so it's not something to totally judge things by.
With that, I think we'll close it down for now. Hope everyone has a very, very nice and pleasant and safe 4th of July weekend. And go Orange. Football season just around the corner, everybody.
Go Orange.